Welcome to Radio Sefarad's English Corner. I'm your host, Linda Jimenez, bringing news and other features of Jewish interest to Radio Sefarad's English-speaking audience in Spain and around the world. Our trivia question for this week is, why did Amy Kurzweil name her graphic memoir, The Flying Couch? Amy Kurzweil is a cartoonist and writer. Originally from the Boston area, she now lives in Brooklyn, New York. She recently published The Flying Couch, a graphic memoir which tells the story of three generations of women in her family. Her grandmother, a Holocaust survivor who escaped from the Warsaw Ghetto, her mother, a psychologist, and herself, a young Jewish artist striving to understand herself and her family history. Amy spoke with us about that history and The Flying Couch.
Thank you very much for speaking with us today, Amy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Could you tell us first a little bit about your own background, where you're from, what you've studied, what you've done, work, that kind of thing?
Sure. I live in Brooklyn. I grew up outside of Boston. I went to school at Stanford University in California. Moved to New York after school. In school, I studied creative writing, English. Always thought I'd be a writer and drew for fun, doodled. And got really into comics when I started reading graphic memoirs that I loved. I started working on this book, Flying Couch, in college. It was quite different and kept working on it for years after school when I moved to New York. I worked as a teacher, actually teaching dance, sometimes writing in public schools, a bit wandering around. And then I decided to get more serious about writing and I went to grad school at the New School, got my MFA in fiction. Meanwhile, I was still working on this book, on this project, found somebody who I actually could work with at the New School. Her name was Ariel Schreg, also a writer and cartoonist. And that's it. So I kept working on the book for years after, and here we are.
The origin of this book, I understand, is that as a college student, you were trying to figure out more or less what being Jewish meant to you. You were kind of looking to explore your Jewish identity. And you read archived interviews with your grandmother. Where did those archived interviews come from? Who did the interviews and when?
Yeah. So the interviews were done in the 90s by a man named Sidney Bukowski, who's no longer around. He did a bunch of interviews with Holocaust survivors. And it's all archived actually online now, Voice Vision Oral History Project. But I was not interacting with those archives online. I actually had a transcript that my mother just handed to me, and it was typed from her words and quite difficult to comprehend. Now I can go online and I can listen to her voice. It's all very nicely organized. I can listen to her voice and I can read the transcript. And there's still some difficulty with chronology, but it's much easier to follow now. What I was given in college was literally just printed out, just one copy of printed out pages from this interview that had been done. And so I was working to try to put together this story more coherently and chronologically based on what I was given. But there's hours of her speaking, and I had pages and pages of her voice. And I actually listed, in some instances, word for word, things that she had said about her story. So the work for me was really in ordering things because, you know, the nature of traumatic memories is that you lose chronology and emotion is sort of driving the storytelling, which can be very compelling. And I was compelled by all the jumps that I noticed in her storytelling. She would start talking about growing up before the war, and then she would start telling about her family. And then, of course, thinking about a sister or a mother or a grandmother who had passed away would cause her to jump to their death, you know. And so I was always having in reading that to take it back to the chronology and try to understand the sequence of events. But having that document really helped me understand which moments from her life were the most emotional, which helped me craft the story in a certain way.
So did you know about this archive before your mother gave it to you, or was that kind of a surprise?
I didn't know about this specific archives.
I mean, about did you know about the interviews with your grandmother?
Yeah, I had known, but I was so young that I didn't understand maybe the significance of it or how important it had been. I did know that it existed, but I didn't know that it was special, I think. And then once I started looking at it, how special and important that document was became more clear to me.
Did you know your grandmother? Is she still alive?
She's still alive, yeah. I mean, I know her well. She's around. She's excited about the book. I think she has a different perspective on what it means to write a book than I do, but she is happy. In her mind, she says, I would do anything for my granddaughter, you know? Like, she's given me her story to tell in this way, partly because she wants me to be a successful writer. You know, it's interesting to see it from her perspective. You know, on the one hand, I think she likes being a star in a way, and then on another hand, she sees it as anything for my granddaughter's success. Like, take my story and tell people, and it's not as much about her as it is about me. And from my perspective, maybe I see this book as validating for our family, not just for me, but for her and for my mother. And it's just interesting to see her perspective on it all.
So did she give you additional information aside from what you had gotten from the original interviews?
Yes, but that information for me was in the form of memories and anecdotes that had been told to me my whole life. And so part of my motivation for wanting to go to the transcript and read the story and make sense of its chronology and all its elements is because I grew up hearing so many of these stories, fragmented pieces of, and you see that in the book, fragmented pieces of memories of her sister or memories of her being injured. She always walks with a limp. She has a hand that is disfigured from an accident that she had. And so, you know, maybe I would ask about that or she would start talking about that. And everything was very fragmented. First of all, fragmented in the way that those stories came out originally when I was a young kid, but also fragmented by my own memory. And, you know, it's like memories of memories. There's just so many layers of fragmentation. So I had all of that, and that's part of what drove the writing of the book. But once I found that transcript, I mean, there was so much information in there, it wasn't necessary for me to be interviewing her again.
It's very interesting because there are so many Holocaust survivors who either don't want to talk about it at all or who want to talk about it. You know what I mean?
That's right. Yes, yeah. Yeah, I think that she's in the camp of people who want to talk about it. And I think that's part of why she is okay. I mean, she's a quirky person, as you can see from my book, but she is happy. I mean, she's a happy person, and she feels that her life has been a success. And I think a big part of that is talking about her story and telling her story so unabashedly and being comfortable with it being a part of a book. I think it's so freeing, and it's so validating for her, you know, to have a kind of almost a special status, because I think we do give, for better or worse, we give a special status to people who survived horrific things, the Holocaust being one of those, especially one of those events in history that we really give a lot of respect when people say, I survived this thing. And so my grandmother has taken that wholeheartedly and been very comfortable with that role. I know that there's pain involved in that for her, because every time she presents herself to somebody as a Holocaust survivor, which she does a lot. You know, she walks, she takes a plane with somebody and sits next to them and they start chatting. And it's not long before she tells them, I survived the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. I was born in the Warsaw Ghetto. And so I know that there's an element of pain involved because every time she says that, she has to remember horrible things. But I think that it's worth it because of how validating it is to say, this is who I am and this is what happened to me. My grandfather, who has a very difficult story also, was not that way. I didn't know him very well, but from what I've heard, he didn't really want to talk about what happened quite as much as my grandmother.
Can you briefly tell us her story?
Who's my grandmother's?
Yeah.
Yeah. her story in a nutshell, if I could, if that's even possible, is she was born in the Warsaw Ghetto. She was 13 years old in 1939 when the ghetto was bombed. And she had four sisters, a grandmother, parents. They were not very wealthy, and they were not particularly religious, but they did have traditions, Jewish traditions. My grandmother has blonde hair and blue eyes, didn't look Jewish, and was the oldest of her sisters. Her father said to her, "I think you can survive. You should leave. You can, you know, you can, you should get out of here." And the line that my grandmother always tells is that he said, "Get out of here and tell everyone what's happening. Tell the world what's being done to the Jews." So she left when she was 13, 1939. She snuck through a hole in the wall. There are a few bricks missing in the wall around the ghetto, and she snuck out. And then essentially she walked many kilometers with very little in the countryside in Poland and disguised herself as a Catholic orphan. She took on a new name, Helena was her name. And she went from farm to farm explaining to people that she was an orphan and that she needed work and she needed a place to live. And she did that for many years. She went back and forth to the ghetto a few times to see her mother again. People slowly were dying, and she brought bread when she could, but eventually it became too difficult. And she describes one harrowing experience of going back to the ghetto and then leaving. And on her way, she looks over her shoulder and she sees that the Gestapo is coming. And that was the last time that she went back to see her family. After that, she ended up in a hospital working in the city in Lukow, and had working in this hospital. And that's when Poland was liberated and the Russians came in, and she knew that she was going to be okay. And that's when she met my grandfather, and the rest kind of was relatively okay from there.
Tell us about the flying couch. First of all, why this name?
Yeah, flying couch. For me, this is a book not so much about the story of a Holocaust survivor, but the story of living with that story. So there are some layers. I thought that I needed a title that could speak metaphorically to three generations of women and speak in some metaphorical way to what that history starts to look like when time passes and generations are seceding on new generations. And so I just kept coming back to this image of a couch. And so maybe the most obvious one is what a couch represents to my mother, who is, you know, the link between my grandmother and I. My mother is a psychologist, and the couch is this place where you sit and you unburden yourself from your history or your mind or whatever it is that's causing you suffering. And I always saw that as important in my mind, this idea of there's this piece of furniture that you sit down on and that's where you tell the story of what is causing you psychological suffering. And so then once I had that image of the couch and what that was for my mother, at least for my mother as she is a psychologist, I started thinking about how my grandmother and I interact with couches. And my grandmother has a habit of covering her couches with towels, cheesy beach towels or bed sheets. She's gotten a little bit better about doing that, but for my whole life, she always did that, and I thought it was so strange. So that was another association I had with couches. Like, why is my grandmother covering up all her furniture, especially her couches, which are pretty nice? And why doesn't she want to just have them look nice in her home? You know, her home means so much to her. Why is she cluttering it in this neurotic way? And of course, it's because her home means so much to her and her furniture means so much to her, because she worked so hard and survived so much to get to a place where she had nice furniture, she then doesn't want to use it, doesn't want to mess it up. And I know other people have family members who do something similar. They put plastic on the furniture. And there's just something really interesting to me about that habit and what it represents about who you are once you've survived so much and you've gotten to this place of comfort. Sometimes it's hard to enjoy that comfort. And so that was another symbol that resonated through the couch. So then thinking about how I interact with couches for me are a place where I just sit and read or sit and write, and I feel that I am relatively maybe, or the hope is that I am unburdening myself in some way from this history of, you know, anxiety about material things, anxiety about home, or, you know, a place where you sit explicitly to unburden yourself of this horrific psychology and history of the Holocaust. Being the third generation, I mean, I don't have an answer to this question, but I think my question was, can I transcend all of that? Can I? And that's why the couch is flying couch, you know, can I really transcend the burdens of my grandmother and my mother? And that's sort of a question I think that's open to the reader at the end of the book. They can ask themselves if they really think I've done that or if it's possible.
Did you write the book in a lineal way? Is the structure lineal, or does it also jump around the way you say the interviews with your grandmother did?
Yeah, that's a good question. My story is, I would say that there are two threads in the book. There's my grandmother's thread, which is definitely linear, and I worked hard to make that story linear. And then there's my story, which juxtaposes with her story, and we go back and forth. And my story is linear in a sense, in that in the first chapter I'm younger, and the second chapter I'm a little bit older, and the third chapter I'm a little bit older, until we get to the last chapter where I'm sort of a young adult living in New York, not too far from the person I am now. But I think that my story is less narrative than my grandmother's. My story is maybe more essayistic, and I'm reflecting on different themes from my life and reflecting on different dynamics at play. There isn't some great narrative arc in my story. It's more anecdotal, whereas my grandmother's story has a pretty clear arc where there is inciting incident, and then there is conflict, and there's loss, and then there is climax, and then there is, you know, a kind of a conclusion of her, the war ending, and her being okay and getting married and coming to America and starting a life. And so there was a pretty clear narrative arc in her story and in mine. I was consciously trying to have less of that traditional narrative arc. The reason being because one of the themes that I was thinking about is this idea of what it feels like to live in the shadow of such a dramatic story. And so having my story be less crafted and less dramatic felt true in juxtaposition with this other story that is so dramatic and harrowing.
You started this journey, as it were, exploring your own Jewish identity, and I was wondering what conclusions you came to and how important one's own family history is in the, let's say, development or establishment of one's identity, especially Jewish identity in this case.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that that's the conclusion. I mean, the conclusion, if there's any conclusion I came to about Jewish identity, it was, at least for me personally, it's the only thing that I can really point to clearly and unequivocally is my family history as being the defining feature of my Jewish identity. And you can see this in the book, I don't have particular attachment to religious ritual. When it comes to my relationship to Israel, I also feel a lot of questioning and doubt, and it's less clear to me what my responsibility is to Israel. I have a lot of questions about it, and some of the things I learned about Israel sometimes feel in conflict with other things I learn about the world or my values. But when it comes to my family history, there's an unequivocal attachment, and there are unequivocal effects of growing up with these women who experienced this thing, being, you know, having to leave the old country and immigrating to America and having loss and trauma from the Holocaust. So, yeah, the sense of Jewish identity that I feel I come to at the end of the book and that I still feel is true for me has to do with questions and doubt about all of the elements of Jewish practice and Jewish politics, and being committed to grappling with that and not just throwing it out and giving it up, but actually wanting to think about it and keep learning about it, and just an attachment to my family and a sense of, like, this is a part of me, you know? It doesn't mean I have to be suffering from every second. You know, we have an ability to transcend these things that have happened to us, but it's a part of you. You can't walk away from it.
Is there anything else you would like to add that we might have left out?
Often people talk to me about why I wrote the story in comics. I don't know if that interests you.
Sure.
Comics for me are really interesting because of two reasons. The first is how when you write a memoir, inevitably there are almost two selves that start to exist. There's a self that's telling the story, and then there's a self that you remember. And comics, it's very cool how that becomes literal. Like, you draw this image of yourself, and it's your past self, and you're looking at it as you're writing the narrative and telling the story. And so there's this really cool way that the narrator and the past self get to be two separate characters, and it's very literal in comics. I was attracted to that for writing a graphic memoir. And then another thing that I have always liked about drawing is how connected to the body it is. There's so much emotion that you can express more directly through drawing, because you draw with your whole arm, and whatever you're feeling in your body inevitably comes through in the line quality. When you're trying to draw, you know, an abstraction that represents joy, your arm feels joyful. I mean, you take on a joyful quality. And similar with rendering expressions, like whenever I draw a sad face or a curious face, I have to make that face on my own face as I'm drawing it. It's almost impossible not to. And so for a story that was about trying to understand and internalize my grandmother's history as a kind of catharsis, drawing was very helpful for getting at that, at those emotional experiences in a way that felt very true and therefore very cathartic.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
To learn more about Amy Kurzweil and the Flying Couch, watch an animated trailer of the book, and listen to interviews with Amy's grandmother, you can go to the links on this page. Well, that's it for this week. As always, we'd love to hear from you, so please email us any comments or suggestions or questions you'd like us to answer on the air. Our address is EnglishCorner@RadioSephirod.com. See you next week.